Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend, where we go behind the scenes and talk to the creators of independent entertainment. I'm Jason Godby, and with me in the Rabbit Hole studio today, he is the acclaimed director of Dementia 13, and his new film is called Bloodbound, making his triumphant return to the studio, Mr. Richard LeMay. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, man, it's great to have you back. You were one of the guinea pigs of the show. You were on the first series before anyone had seen anything, and our format was a little bit different. So thanks so much for coming back, man.
No, my pleasure.
And we even said on that episode, you know, I said, come back when you have the new movie out. Right. So let's get right into it. Now, if you want to know more about Richard, you can take a look at episode 106, which is where we talk all about him and, you know, his directing career and how he got to be where he is. But now we're going to, because Bloodbound is out here in 2019, we're going to talk about that film and the process of making it and give you guys like a behind the scenes inside look from the director's perspective. So let's get right into it. So Bloodbound is the movie.
Yes.
Tell us about it. What's it about? Give me like the Hollywood log line. What's the pitch?
It's a family of witches descend on a small town to perform an ancient ritual of human sacrifice. That's the short version.
Sounds like a very charming Woody Allen-esque
yeah, lots comedy. Of laughs, you know, wackiness ensues.
When's the tap number? So would you call it a suspense thriller, horror? What genre would you put it into?
When I started off, I thought of it as a thriller, but it's really a horror. I'm a horror fan, and it's got, you know, witchcraft, demons, they rip hearts out and eat it. It's there's a lot of stuff going on there. So,
all right, and who stars in the movie?
We have Eden Brolin, Josh Brolin's daughter, and she's she's going to blow everybody's mind because she's really good. Eric Nelson, 3-time Emmy Award winner. Gerald McCulloch from CSI. Vanessa Rubio from Cobra Kai, and Joseph Melendez from
Who's been on the show. Yes, yeah. who was great. He talked about playing his character here. He plays sort of the dad, like the sort of the head of the coven, I guess. How would you describe his part?
I would say that he's kind of in charge of making sure this this thing goes the way it should. So he's a
Yeah, he had some interesting commentary about that we were talking about his character and so forth. So check out, if you want to know more about that, check out episode 212 of the show, I believe is Joseph's episode. So tell us a little bit about how making it, like how many days did you have to make it? Where did you make it here in the city or where did you make it?
Oh, we shot upstate in Sullivan County. So I don't know if you've ever been there. It's beautiful. I go there to vacation quite a bit. So I rode it up there. And I wanted to shoot it there. So we all went up, and it was kind of amazing because we had bonfires at the end of every night, and it was a really nice atmosphere.
It also sacrifices by the bonfire.
We sacrificed a few people.
Right, the misbehaving crew members, I'm sure.
I feel like I was the one who was sacrificed. It took a lot out of me.
How many days did you have to shoot it?
We shot it in 18 days.
Wow.
That's not a lot. Especially for a movie that size.
Well, how long is the script? You're talking like a 100-page script? Or?
I don't even remember. It's probably about 110 pages. So wow. We had to cut stuff. Don't give me too much credit because, I think anytime you do any low-budget film, there is compromise. And that's cool because that's the name of the game. And I think it's about how well you react on your feet. So
sometimes stuff gets better because of the compromise. Sometimes it gets worse. Let's face it, we never have enough time. You know, time is money. You never have enough time or money when you're making, things in the low budget realm, or if you're trying to produce something any independent production. They could have $5 million, which is a lot of money to some people, but they'll still say it wasn't enough to make the movie they were trying to make it with. So when you're doing this, like if you're shooting 110 page script in 18 days, you're cooking through pages per day. For you, I mean, just to give us a little director's insight, like how do you approach that? How do you attack that kind of subject matter and how do you get into it so you can get through the pages every day and make your day?
I always say with every movie, it's because if you're talking about time constraints, then you have to really you have to find your rhythm. So I always say the first 2 days we start low, you know, 3 to 5 pages, which for big budget movies, that's very, very high.
Right, it's so ambitious.
For me, that's low. But when you get going, after the third day on, you're shooting 6 to 10 pages a day. And you just have to know that's what it is. I think you have to take into consideration certain things. If you have like a ritual in the woods with fire and stuff like that and multiple people, or if you have special effects, demons or practical gags, you have to give that the time it deserves. And a lot of times it isn't enough time, but you have to give it more time than just two people sitting in a diner, you know?
Yeah, well, it's also a matter of safety and making sure that everything's planned out beforehand. Mm-hmm. And that stuff just takes time. I mean, and it takes time to light that, and it takes time to sort of approach it. I mean, when you're doing that, because, you know, I've been on shows where you're doing maybe 5-6 pages a day, and if you have a small crew, it's taxing. Like, you're burnt at the end of the day. If you're shooting, you know, 10-plus pages a day, it's a lot. Was the material dialogue heavy, or was it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't your typical horror movie. It's very character-driven. I knew walking into it, as a horror fan, you have to give horror fans what they want as well. So there are some scares and there's some gore, but essentially it's a meditation on these two people who are trapped in a situation on two ends of the spectrum trying to get out of this thing. So,
and because you're shooting dialogue heavy stuff and you're trying to get the drama of things, were you able to do things like rehearse with the actors and spend some time?
I kind of demand that anyways. So I no matter what I do, I think rehearsal is really key. So we had about 2 weeks here in the city, and then when we got up there, we only had two days just to get our feet wet in the actual location. So, but we had a lot of time with the actors beforehand.
Oh, that's good. I mean, that's also a luxury that most, like a lot of productions don't get, and it makes a big difference. I mean, some people also, I've talked about this with other directors too, but a lot of directors, especially film directors, they don't kind of know how to use rehearsal because you know, there's two kinds of rehearsal, right? For us, there's rehearsal with the actors and working on performance. And then there's, you know, camera moves and, you know, getting those things down, which you kind of have to do on set. But everything, I assume, like, even if you're doing rehearsals and you're, you know, you're not, like, blocking and trying to get those types of things down. Or did you do that?
Somewhat, yeah. Okay. I think that's important because you have to tweak when you get on set. But ultimately, you have to have an idea where these people are going somewhat, you know. So you can always tweak that stuff when you get there. But I think it's really important to work with the actors because when you get to the set and the actors have a handle on what they're doing, it makes it easier to just kind of work on the technical aspect. And then their performance just gives life to it.
Did that inform the way you were going to shoot it? Like, did you find things in rehearsal with them that said, you know what, I really need to do this one in a single, or I thought I was going to do this in a one-er, but now I got to break it up, or, you know, things like that?
I wouldn't say that in rehearsal necessarily. We were pretty sure of what we wanted visually, but I think when you get there, you say, oh, you know, if you're on a dry riverbed, you're like, wow, where you're going to shoot it, a tight shot. So that turned into like 130-foot dolly shot just walking in one take. And so there's things like that where you can say in the moment, yeah, let's try this, you know.
Yeah, this is where it's counterintuitive, and this is where I think it gets kind of fun too. It's like, because you can work on that stuff, right? You work out in rehearsal and you say, well, we're going to shoot it this way, or you have an idea, and then when you get to location, you have the location inform the shot. And then but because you're so well rehearsed, it's not as big a deal as if you were like doing it on the fly, because now the actors, they know where they're going, they have a sense of the characters, they know what they're saying. And now if you've switched mm-hmm. something up, you know, like you're gone from a single close up to a dolly shot where they're walking and talking or they're moving, it's not as big a deal because they've got the lines, they've got the character, they know where they are in the scene and they know who they're talking to. So they're not like, there's no confusion and they can kind of you know, they can bend and flex,
yeah,
you know, because they had the foundation
and
to begin with.
That's why I think it's important. I think some producers think they're saving money by not having rehearsal. But at the end of the day, I think, wasting money. I think you're saving money by spending a little extra before you get there, because then the performance is usually something you have to kind of really hammer out. And not everybody's good with that. I mean, if you can have a great actor, but if you don't know how to ask for something, it turns into a long day. So, you know, I was fortunate. I had the whole cast. I love every one of them. Every one of them.
And you said, I remember when we talked, Richard was on a panel that I moderated about casting. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about casting Joseph and how, like, you originally had a different vision of who that character would be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he kind of walked in the room and changed things. But that can only happen if you were open to it. Like, if you were so solid in, you know, if you have everything sort of, like, it's a mixture, right? Like, so you have to, you want to nail down a performance, or you want to nail down, like, this is what I want. But you also have to be flexible to be able to adjust on the fly when you get to the, it's a weird job directing in that way.
I came up in the no-budget filmmaking world. So if you don't have money or time, you got to be good on your feet. And I think that's a skill that I learned early on, and I still take it with me. I think there's always room to adapt. There's always room to tweak. And that's where the magic comes from. When you make a decision right there in the moment, and everyone goes, wow, where did that come from? You know?
Right. But it becomes easier to make those decisions if you know what you want to begin with.
Yeah.
If you have an idea, if you have a vision for it, rather than just trying to, like, make it up on the fly when you get there. Or
an interesting thing about this particular project, I was working with my cinematographer, Vitaly Boxer, who's a genius. And we had worked on our last film, Naked As We Came, together. So we wanted this to be so much bigger and more exciting in every way. So we had a lot of big shots planned. But when you get in there and you get 18 days to shoot 110 pages, you have to pick your specialty shots, and you have to be really crafty on how you do that to maybe like 130 feet of dolly track in the forest. Yeah, we shot that way, but I'm like, now we got to shoot this way just to utilize that. So then we ended up turning it into two different shots. And so that's thinking on your feet. As soon as you see the location, everything changes. But knowing you can't shoot those specialty shots every day, you had to pick and choose. So every day was like one great shot.
Yeah, and, you know, it's pick your battles kind of thing. You go, you know, what's the best for the movie?
Yeah.
And B, what's the best for this day? You know, and how can I win the war this day?
What's best for my sanity?
Yeah, it's a lot of that, too. I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, I was doing a lot of jobs, and you always want it to be kind of bigger and better than you can get. But when you do get that one shot, it's like it feels so good because you had to fight for it. Mm. And then when you see it in the movie, you're like, oh, okay, you know, that was worth the pain and the sweat and the not sleeping the night before and all that kind of stuff. But it's hard. I mean, like, and you got to be a good director to do that stuff. I mean, I saw this great behind the scenes thing with Peter Bogdanovich. He was directing a great little movie called The Cat's Meow. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a sort of independent film, really great cast. But, you know, they were chiseling out stuff in the script while they were shooting because they were running out of time. And he was shooting stuff in oners because he's like, I got good actors. They know the material. We can get this in one shot. And he would do so much coverage in that oneer that you think you saw five shots, but it's one shot. But you only had to shoot it like five times, as opposed to doing five setups five times, you know, and planning. And because it was so well planned out, he could like get the performance down, nail it. And then when you go to edit, it's like, that's the shot. That one take is the shot. I don't have five takes of five setups to choose from.
Yeah.
It's just that one, and it's good because we worked on it and took the time to get it that one down, you know, instead of trying to, you know, people try to do the opposite when they don't have time. They try to cover everything.
Right.
You know, and they try to, like, it's like dump truck directing where you're shooting like 50 setups of everything and trying to get every angle, and then, well, we'll figure it out in editing. It's like, no, you got to figure it out beforehand, and then you know what you're doing, kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting. I keep going back to this 130 foot of dolly track in the forest. And, you know, we shot the first shot, and it was two people walking. And then it's a pretty lengthy scene, but they did it. And then when you reverse it, I'm like, we can't have just two people walking, because that was what I was going to do. That was in the script. So using the dolly track, we started in a two shot. They stand up. We all start moving with the dolly. And then it ends in an OTS over the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really got so much bang for my buck out of that. And it was a happy accident. I didn't plan on that. Like, when we were doing the blocking, we're like, that's amazing.
Directing in New York, because you've directed movies here and stuff like that. When you're shooting, particularly, like, street stuff, I tell people everything I learned by watching Law & Order. You know, like, because they would get, there were so many, like, little walk and talks and stuff where they would just, where they would do, like, this sort of, like, button hook pattern where you'd have two actors doing a walk and talk, and then the cameraman would just kind of walk around, and then you'd get like an over the shoulder of the last guy who had the last line. And you see that like over and over again, but it works.
Those little tricks, they're there for a reason.
Yeah, those little things. Cause, I mean, in television, you're moving really fast, but like, yeah, for like doing what you're doing is like shooting a TV show. You shot like a feature film in what normally is like a TV schedule. So like,
well, Dimension 13 was only 20 days.
Yeah.
And wow. I was in one location, and we still didn't have enough time. You know what I mean? Although that had a lot of specialty shots.
Yeah.
The photography's pretty cool in that.
Well, and with this, too, I mean, like, the other thing I was going to ask you about directing-wise is kind of the subject matter. First of all, so you wrote this picture, right?
Yeah.
Did you co-write it, or you wrote it all by yourself?
I wrote it by myself.
So what was the inspiration behind it, or why this film?
I'm almost embarrassed to say this. It's crazy. I was reading the news, and there was a home invasion in Long Island, and these people got hurt very badly by these group of people. And I just kept thinking about that for some reason, like, what would I do? And it turned into a rage fantasy. And I kept thinking and thinking. And then eventually it became like, what if you could, like, turn the tables on these people breaking into your house? And then it eventually turned into, what if there were witches? And then someone breaks in, and then you're captured and part of this bigger picture, unbeknownst to you. And that's where it started. And yeah, so I went up to Berryville and upstate New York, and I wrote it alone in the woods and scared the hell out of myself. And here we are.
When you're working with actors on stuff like that, I mean, because like when Joseph was here, he's like, you know, yeah, you're like talking about like, how do you play a witch? Like, it's the, you know, it's weird. Like, it's a weird subject matter. But so you as director, like, a lot of times I think you have to be like an interpreter. You have to kind of like translate this material into actor speak to get people to do this stuff.
I also didn't want like evil beings. You know, these witches are not like, we're bad. You know, so I think I wanted everyone's good. There's really no bad people. It's just the good people having to do a bad thing. And it's something they don't want to do. And that's kind of where they are. And so every one of them, you kind of feel for them, too, because they're like, you know, as this goes on, it gets pretty dark. It's a very dark film.
But you don't, like, so what you're trying to do is ground this thing in realism so that you have kind of real people going through a supernatural element rather than, like, somebody's Voldemort, you know, like somebody's, right. Like, you know, I mean, and good on any actor who can play something like that. Like, good on Ralph Fiennes for being able to, you know, find
brilliantly,
great, find that character who's, you know, basically like evil wizard Nazi or whatever. But like, for, you know, for you, it's like you, and it's also you're rooting things in kind of the small world of like, it's this setting. It's not, you know, nobody's taking over the world kind of thing as we've become used to in cinema today.
And these people, these witches in this particular movie are, they've kind of evolved in a way. They look at mankind as kind of like just going off the rails, and they take pleasure in nature and the simple things. And so whenever you're around them, you're out in the woods, you're out in this beautiful home that they're staying in, and there's a lot of nature around them. And that kind of adds to the beauty of this little film.
For you, too, like, was there like a way in that you had for the actors, like a key that you would like sort of give them to, like, I remember Mike Nichols said to, he was doing Birdcage with Nathan Lane and Robin Williams, two really, really funny actors. And he got that comedy, but he said, listen, we can always get laughs. That was his way in. He was like, play it for real. You know, like, don't worry about the laughs will come kind of thing.
Right.
Do you do the same thing in a horror movie where you're like, you know, play the reality and the horror will come? Does
that
work?
That's how I did it. I mean, I thought it was really important to play this like a drama where everything goes just completely to the dark side. And like, what would you do? You know, there's this Edith Brolin plays this girl and she's not a nice girl. She starts off the movie and she's kind of a bad girl. And not that she deserves what happens to her, but it's kind of her journey. So towards the end, she starts to realize where she's kind of gone wrong. And I think that was just all about being a human, you know. And
you mean you gave somebody an actual character arc in a horror movie?
I know. I hope people like it.
Yeah, crazy. I think that's what a lot of. I think when I look at either horror pictures or different genre pictures, I think the biggest mistake is, you know, too much world building, where mm-hmm. it's like it becomes about the world building instead of about the people. You know, like we talked about Alien the last time we were on here, and you know, you said like Alien's a perfect movie, and the reason why Alien works is because the people are real. They feel like real people. They don't feel like, you know, it's horror movie guy who's going to get killed in 5 minutes kind of thing.
It's funny that you should say that, because when I was talking to the secondary characters, I like to go out and like have coffee and talk about stuff before we even start rehearsals or anything. And I was telling them, watch Alien and look at the smaller characters. Everyone's really fully realized. And when they die, you have a reaction to that because you got to know them on some level. And I think that's really important. So that's what we were striving for. I don't know if we got it, but we were going for it.
Yeah, who's it? There's a great tight close-up. Is it Harry Dean Stanton? Where you see the alien drop back down? You really don't want Harry Dean Stanton to die. Like, because he's Harry Dean Stanton. He's just that actor. Right. And a lot of times I think those characters are rich characters because of who's playing them. You know, because you had somebody like Joseph, because you had someone like Eden, you had good actors that, you know, and that makes a difference too. I mean, a lot of these horror films, the acting is not there because they say, oh, it's a horror picture. We don't have to cast stars. We don't have to cast, you know, this person's going to last 5 minutes. But then you realize like, yeah, well, even if they do, if you have somebody good enough to embody that person for 5 minutes, then maybe you'll care about them. Because most of the time you don't care. And it's like, that's not entertaining. It's not like you don't feel anything.
Right.
I had this long discussion with our friend Darren. We were talking about horror movies and why we don't like them, or why we're not like horror buffs, and like what makes people watch horror movies. And it was like this, we got this deep philosophical discussion, and I don't know if you agree with this, but like things have gotten to be so extreme today in our culture that sometimes we need to look at this stuff to kind of remind us what it was like to feel, you know, something on a visceral level where, you know, and it's a special kind of, you know, you in the dark with a bunch of other people, you know, being able to see that stuff.
I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons we gravitate towards different things. You know, horror is a real escape. You know, it scares you. It takes you out of your reality. It's one of those genre films that it completely takes you out of reality. You know what I mean? If you're watching a movie about vampires, you're never gonna come across a vampire. So hopefully,
spoilers for those of you who are hoping, for you East Village kids down there
in the
goth scene who are just hoping you'd get bit one day. but you're right. It's one of those things that kind of it's like a real roller coaster ride.
Yeah, you know?
It's like a 2 hour long roller coaster ride.
Yeah, and it's funny. Talking about like character development, I think about The Exorcist, which I love. And for me, it's not about the head turning and the pea soup coming out of her mouth. It's Ellen Burstyn screaming at the doctor, "That's not my daughter. That thing up there is not my daughter." And then you see her unraveling, and that's scary because she doesn't know how to make sense of it.
Right.
You know?
And it helps that she's Ellen Burstyn.
And it helps.
You know, like,
we all should have Ellen.
You know, Burstyn. If it was Suzanne Somers, you probably. No offense to Suzanne Somers. But, you know, like, the fact that she's, like, one of the greatest actresses on the planet Earth helps a lot. Anyway, I got to get moving here because we got to wrap up. But right. Do you have anything upcoming that you want to kind of talk about? Or first, tell me, where can people find out more about Bloodbound and where can they find it?
It's streaming on almost all streaming platforms. It's on demand, iTunes, Amazon. So it's all over the place. If you just Google it, Bloodbound 2019, you'll see.
Is there a website for it?
There is not. We have a Facebook page, of course.
Okay.
But, you know, all the information is kind of out there.
But YouTube, if people look up, like, Bloodbound movie, they'll
2019.
Find
there's other variations of
Bloodbound 2019. Okay. Yeah. And then where can people find out more about you if they want to, like, hire you or look more up of your stuff up?
My website is rlemay.com. And that's pretty a comprehensive look at what I've done. So you can always contact me through there.
Fabulous, fabulous. So, you know, if you ever have anything else, you can always come back.
Thank you.
It's always great having you here. And I really like doing this deep dive on directing and, you know, talk to somebody with real experience. And I look forward to seeing more of your stuff. So thanks for coming. I'm going to wrap up. Thank you. And
thank
you all out there for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more episodes of this show, you can find them on our new website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. You can still go to the old website, but it will direct you to the new website with all the episodes. You can also find us on all the major podcast platforms, including Anchor, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Once again, love to thank my guest, Richard LeMay, and thank you once again for Behind the Rabbit Productions. I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.